Yeah, thank you very much. I'm glad that at a conference about hope for Europe, we not only talk about the people of Europe, but we also talk about the earth and the birds and the plants of Europe. Because hope for Europe and hope for the future has everything to do with hope for the earth as well. And when we talk about ecology, care for the environment, care for the earth, it has not really been an issue among the Christian church, has it? And particularly among the evangelicals. For long, it has been kind of two different themes. And there's a book written by Dave Buchlis. It's called Planetwise. Dave Buchlis is the director of Arusha UK. Arusha is an international Christian organization for the earth, care for nature. And he has written in his book four kinds of reactions Christians give to him when he talks about care for the earth. And there are some, a small group, who says, well, talking about care for the earth, it's a bit risky. It's New Age or it's left wing. We'd better not talk about it as Christians. There's another group who says, well, it's not relevant, really. We must save souls, not seals. And I must say, in the 15 years I worked for Time to Turn and other projects, I've heard this argument often from Christians. It's about souls. But I think it's about souls and seals. A third reaction is probably the most common reaction. It's kind of a secondary reaction. Well, you have your hobby, I have mine. You're good in praying, you're good in evangelism. Well, you're good for caring for the earth. Well, it's all right. But I think the fourth reaction is maybe, I think, what we find in the Bible, and that is that care for the earth is an integral part of Christian life. As Christians, we're all involved in prayer, and some are more, but we all have prayer as a mission. The same is for evangelism, and I think the same is for caring for the earth. What does the Bible say about the earth? I want to highlight just a few things because 30 minutes is not that long. And I also love to tell something about my research because I think this involves also very interesting lessons. So first, look at the Bible. When we read the Bible, we start in Genesis and we read that God created the earth. Words we have heard over and over and over again. But what does it mean? It means that the earth is the Lord's. It belongs to God. God created anything that exists in the past, but he still does. It is like a painting. There was a man from the Netherlands, Wim Rietkerk. He once said, when you look at a painting, you can recognize the painter in it. When you see a Rembrandt, you see, wow, that's really a Rembrandt. And that's the same with nature. When we look at nature, we can recognize the hand of God in it. We can recognize him as creator of nature. So nature itself tells about God. And that's one reason why we should not, never, ever destroy the earth. Because it tells about God. It tells about how great he is. Maybe you recognize it when you're on holiday and you walk in the mountains or at another beautiful spot and you get overwhelmed by its splendor, by its greatness. Well, I will challenge you to have that feeling in daily life. Just when you walk out or when you sit in your garden, see what creation tells and take the time to let it come in. In many places in the Bible and also in Psalm 24, verses 1, it says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. And this contrasts very highly with the attitude we have, particularly in Europe, I think in Western world, that we think the earth is ours and we can do with it what we want. But it's clear, it's God's earth. It's God's money. It's God's things. This is God's. Everything on earth belongs to God. We can use it and we can do good things with it, but ultimately it belongs to God. And that's the same with the earth. With everything we consume, everything we buy, every choice we make, it has to do with things that belong to God. That's stewardship in its heart, that you deal with things which are not your possession. So I think we should treat these things that belong to God in the way he would do it. Years ago, we wore little wristbands. Maybe you remember it. What would Jesus do? That's, in fact, stewardship. What would God do? So the earth is the Lord's. Then the second thing, what is the role of humans? We humans are creation as well. The first man in the Bible, Adam, is called Adam, Adama, and it means earth. It means humus. He's made from the earth. We are also created from the earth. And sometimes we say with a joke, we're just created on the sixth day, so let's be humble. At the same time, we're made in the image of God. So we're different from other creatures. And what does it mean that we are created in the image of God? It means that in us and through us, people can see God. It's like a son, and people say, hey, he looks like his father. So I hope that we, in the way we act, the things we do, we visualize something of God, that God becomes visible in the choices we make. To be honest, and Ronkia already said it, we must admit that we have not lived as in this image of God for long. And I think when we look around the world, we see that many things go wrong. We'll hear about sexual abuse and sexual traffic from Patricia Green in the next session. But there's also a lot wrong in the way we treat the earth. And open your eyes when we see the climate change, when we read about loss of biodiversity, depletion of resources. These are all symptoms of things that are wrong. And I think that one of the most important things that go wrong, it was mentioned this morning already, is our greed. That we do not know what is enough. We have consumption patterns that go much way beyond what the earth can carry. And in choosing these kinds of consumption patterns, it affects the earth and it affects other people. People who work maybe far beyond our visible worlds, but that's a kind of a new slavery that we see in the way we consume. We do not know what we really need. I think we use much too much. And it is not without reason that Jesus already prayed in Matthew 6, verses 19-21, I read, he said, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. So that's the role of we as humans. We are created, we are creation, and we are created in the image of God. So we should act in the image of God. And as Jesus said, you cannot follow the mammon and God. So we must choose. We must choose for God and not for the mammon. And he promises that when we choose for God, he will supply in our needs. And he knows what we need. And I think when we follow Christ and we are dependent, we have open hands, he will show what is sufficient. And we always will have enough. The third thing is, how do we look at nature? Yesterday we talked often about the roots of Europe and the Christian roots, and I think that the Western form of Christianity is also molded by old Greek thinking. And the way we look at the earth is also molded or shaped by old Greek thinking. And what you see is quite a hierarchical way of thinking. God is at the top, then we have the humans, then we have nature, and so on. We're placed above nature. But when you look at the Bible and you read about old Jewish thinking, you'd better draw a triangle. And then you see God at one point, you see humans as another point, and you see nature as an entity in itself and as worthful because it is creation of God. And it's not only created for human pleasure or for human needs, but it has a meaning in itself as creation, as created by God. And that's, I think, very fundamental. When we realize that nature is not only there to, how do you say that? To be sufficient for our needs, but you see that it is, has a value in itself because it's creation of God, because it shows his splendor. So it has a right, it has a value to be there, even if it does not have a direct meaning for us as humans. So when you look at Colossians, it's a beautiful poem, and it says in verses 16 and then until 20, For by him, by Jesus, all things were created, things in heaven and on earth. All things were created by him and for him. I think the earth is not in the first place created for humans, but it is in the first place created for God. And we as humans may use it in his image. So then what is the role of Jesus in care for the creation? I think it's very, very fundamental. Because it says in 19 and 20, for God was so pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him and through him, reconcile to him all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. And the same thing in John 3, verse 16, the very, very well-known text where the apostle says that God so loved the world that he gave his own one and only Son. It says, he so loved the world. We often say, he so much loves me and you, which is true, but the original word is cosmos. For God so much loved the cosmos, his world, that he gave his Son. We see in these texts that Jesus came to reconcile all the earth with him. Not only humans, but he came to reconcile all the earth, all creation with him. And that may make our hope in Christ much broader. And maybe also the theme of this conference much broader. Hope for Europe, hope for the world, is hope for creation, including people. But it's for all of creation. We as humans need creation for our life. We're dependent on it, and we must admit that. It may also give us another perspective on life on earth. It gave me an extra motivation to participate in nature conservation. Because it is worthful for God. It's worthful for Jesus. And that makes it also worthful for me. God does not let go of the things his hand began, we often say. And I think that also counts for creation. He started by creating the earth. And he created all of us here. And he still continues with creating this earth. He is still occupied with it. Then, when we look at the earth around us, we see all the problems. We see all the things that are fundamentally wrong. We as Christians have a story of hope. And that story is not that we can solve all these problems, but we do know that the cause of these problems are deeply within us. The causes that we do not care for the earth, that we do not care for other people, that we buy things that are made far beyond us, where people do not even have good water and good food to eat. It has to do because there's something wrong inside us. We choose for ourselves. We choose for money. It's selfishness. It's greed. And we know that only Jesus can take that away and can heal that. So even environmental problems can be saved ultimately when we realize that God is the owner and the creator, and that we should converse ourselves and also converse our way of life to Christ. And this has implications for our lifestyle. That's why it's often not a very popular story to tell about nature. Many people are happy to hear about the beauty of nature, but are not very happy to hear about that their lifestyle should be changed. But I think that is really needed. When we look at the European, about the Western lifestyle, we really, really have to be serious and to admit that things have to be changed. We should use less material, less energy, because it has gone beyond what the earth can carry. And the poor people and the rich people, the difference between these groups are growing still. So it's really needed that we come up for justice and we come up for the earth. Something about stewardship, about the word stewardship. Where have I it? Here. The word stewardship comes from the word oikonomos. Maybe you heard that word before. It means caretaker of the house. It's a word, in fact, that in the Old Testament is not related, is not used anyway in the Old Testament. It's only used in the New Testament for people taking care over the house or over talents or other things. We use this term often for environmental care, and I think it's a good word if we talk about what is the house we have to take care of. And since we are living in a more and more globalized world, I think this house we should take care for has become the global world. Are we then responsible for all things that go wrong? I don't think so, because that's too big. But we are responsible for the things we do ourselves, for the choices we make ourselves, and the consequences of the choices we have made. So I think we should think about all choices we make and the effects of it on the earth, on other people. And that is stewardship, to take care of the house, to take care of the earth we use, about the people who live in that house and we have relationships with. When I was preparing for this and I was asked to write something in the little book on hope for Europe, I was also thinking about what happened about 200 years ago with William Wilberforce. You might have heard about him. What is happening, what I was thinking, is why have we not seen it for so long as Christians? Why for so long environmental care has not been a subject in the church? Why is it that we are so focused on human relations, which are good, on other themes related to people and not to the earth? Why is it? And I read the story about William Wilberforce and I saw the movie, as many of you might have seen. What he did in his time was calling attention on the terrible injustice of slavery. And during his time, people had accepted slavery as something which was not bad in itself. Even within the church, people said that it was not wrong in itself, and they even had a theological arguments for it. And what he did his whole life, was telling the people and telling in Parliament and also in the church that they have seen it wrong and that slavery was wrong, also could not be justified from the Bible. And maybe we are standing before such a change again, that we have read the Bible, we have overread all these verses on the earth, that we have overread the meaning of texts like John 3, verses 16, that we have always read it with glasses that focus it on people. But if we start to read the Bible from the Old Testamentic view, from the way the people lived then we shall understand that it includes the earth. For God, it's, I think, not two separate things. Of course, as humans, you have another role, but you are also creation. And I hope that we start in the church to rediscover the real meaning of these texts and what it says about caring for the earth. And there are many, many more texts in the Bible I could mention. I want to tell you, to advise you to read the book of Dave Buchlitz. It's a very easy reading book, I think, which might open your eyes for caring for the earth. It's called Planet Wise. I talked about the four reactions in the beginning: the risky, not relevant, secondary, but also integral. And the second part of my story, I want to tell something about integral people who are, for me, examples of who have made their lifestyle an integral part related to their faith and related to their values. And that is what my study was about. I studied four religious communities, all long-existing Christian communities, which lived in a way that has a low environmental impact. So it was in many ways, not in all, but in many ways, good for the earth. But it was also related to their faith. And these four groups are the Amish. I lived there for 3 months. The Hutterites. It's also an Anabaptist group, the Benedictine tradition order, and the Franciscan order. And I studied in these groups what choices they make in daily life regarding their food, their agriculture, the energy use, the transport. But I also studied which values were important for them, how they related their choices to their faith, and also how could they maintain these values. And I ended up with three or four lessons and principles we might learn also as church in Europe from it. And the first is moderation. All these groups choose for moderation because they say when we have too much possessions, when we are too rich in a worldly sense, it might prevent us or it might be an obstacle to find the richness we can find in Christ. And I think this is really a serious thing in Western culture. We are so rich. We have so much. And Jesus already mentioned it in Matthew, as I said. I think money and possessions can take us away from God and from what is really important in life. it can also take us apart from other people, because we are so focused on what we think that we need that we don't see the needs of others, and that we are not willing to share, not until it hurts. And I think we should look at what we really need, limit our consumption, and look what are the necessary needs we have, also for spiritual reasons. And it also has good impact on the environment. For these four groups, that was not their motivation, but it was a consequence, a good consequence. So moderation. It's a challenge, I think, for the church as well, also to make it practical. We can share things. We can be very creative, I think, in church areas to share things, to do things together. The second one has to do with the Benedictine community. The Benedictines have three vows they make or they take when they become a Benedictine. And the first is the vow of stability. A Benedictine monk or nun who comes to the order takes the vow of commitment to the local place, not only to the religious thoughts, but also practically, physically to the place. And maybe that's also a challenge for us as local churches. Do we have, are we committed to the place the local church is? Or are we traveling miles and miles and miles just to have the service and miles and miles and miles again back to our houses? Are we committed to the place we are as church? And also as individuals, are we committed to the place we live? Do we take care of the people there? And also, do we take care of the environment there? I know churches who just are active in picking trash or cleaning up parks. And these are also symbols of the richness of God. A third one is reflectiveness. And that was something I really found at the Amish. Many people think that the Amish have not changed in 200 years. And I must say, that is not right. I found the Amish as a community that was really reflective, not so much in an intellectual way, but in a very practical way. For them, it was very important to keep their values, their value of community, their value of religious, room to have their way of religion. For them, these values were very important, and the choices they made in their lifestyle, in their economy, and in other things were also made in such a way that these values could be maintained. So that's why they sometimes limited themselves and choose not to do some things in order to keep the things they found were really important. Just to give an example, not to copy, but it's the principle. The Amish have chosen not to buy cars. They see that a car is helpful and it's can be very practical, but they say that as long as they stay to their horse and buggies, their range of traveling is limited. And they say, as long as we stay to the horse, we can keep our community. And when we lose that, then our community will also fade away. They do use cars. They're not against cars. They use taxis, they use public transport and so on. But they made a limit for themselves in order to keep what they thought was really important. And I think that's a challenge for us in Europe and a challenge for us as churches as well. What do we think is really important? And do we put that first? And then all the choices we make, we reflect on what is really important, on that quality of life. And when we do that, and then we will be focused on the future, because we are looking for ways to keep that what is really important. And so to say no sometimes to things, which are good in itself, but might be challenging what is really important. And the last one is the role of the community in this. All these four communities say we need a community to keep this. Without community as individual, it is so hard to do that. Well, we as Christians know that. But you need a community. You need other people to help, to focus on what is really important, and also to help you to make these choices. And regarding stewardship, I think the community can do a lot of things. Practically, in sharing things, sharing cars. Why not a car share project in the church? So many practical things, but also in thinking, rethinking and reflecting on things. So I will challenge the churches not only to talk about people-related issues, but also about what you spend your money on. What choices do you make? Why do you buy this car and not that car? We do not want to talk about these things. We say that has nothing to do with being a Christian. Well, I will say it has to do with being a Christian. Not that I say all Christians buy that kind of car, but that you think about it and you realize together that there are alternatives that has a lower impact on the environment. So that's the challenge and the role of the community. Stimulate reflectiveness, stimulate choices, help each other. It's not always easy. Help each other. You need each other to do it. So I will finish with worshiping God. Worshiping God, we can do it with our songs. We can worship God with our hands in the air. But we can also worship God by what we do. We can worship God by what we buy, the way we buy it. We can worship God with the way we have our garden. We can worship God in our daily life, in everything we do. And in this way, I think we learn to be happy with enough. We learn to be happy with what is sufficient, to share with others, to preserve nature in order to let it grow and blossom for our Creator. That we learn from the past, act now to preserve the earth for the future. Thank you.
Anyone who has a burning question for Martine?
All right.
What changes has she personally made?
Okay. Many. Yeah. Well, it has been, well, Romtje said, I've been busy, occupied with these themes quite long, so it has been a long process as well. It starts with what is really important in life. Also with what do we spend my time on, my work on? What kind of work do I choose? Do I go for the most, you know, the job that pays most, or what is it? But also in a very practical sense, we bought our house 3 years ago and we made it nearly energy completely efficient, so we have no CO2, how do you say that? The emissions anymore, so it's a whole technical story, but we changed many things in the house, so it's CO2 neutral. We buy all our food organic food, everything. Green energy. I think about it, the things I buy, everything is either it's organic or it's been very solid to last for long, or it's secondhand. I buy also quite a lot of things secondhand. That's my daughter. She's nearly 4, and lately I had a little dress for her. She's, oh, is it a dress that another girl has worn? She's quite used to it still. I don't know how long I can keep it that way. But it's just trying to make them aware that the world is bigger than just that you have to buy everything the magazines say. So that's what I tell myself and also tell her and the people around us is, what does make you worthful? And it's not what you have, and it's not what you do, your job, but it is you are worth, you have value in yourself. So please do not focus so much on materialism. So it has to change, well, thinking about how you spend money, time, and practically, yeah. I travel with public transport quite often, but in the Netherlands we have a very great public transport system. Yeah.
One more.
Yeah, with Arosha.
The question is, do you also do something globally?
Well, it is in participating Arosha. Well, in my job, I did not do really any global, not that I'm aware of. Well, publishing my thesis maybe, but I was active in Arosha. I was the chair of the Netherlands for quite some years, and Arosha is an international Christian organization for nature preservation. It's active in all parts of the world, actually, in 25 countries now, and it's about 26 years ago it started in Portugal, and that's why it's called Arosha. It means the rock. It's a Portuguese word. And they have local centers, nature centers, in many countries over the world. So when you go to Arocha, ARocha.org, there you will find a list of all countries where Arocha is active. And that's an international network, and I was happy to meet many people from other countries who work in either Kenya or in many countries. And that's really motivated from the Christian point of view. And that's nice to tell also. That Psalm 24, verses 1, I mentioned, the earth is the Lord's, is really their sentence. And to the other environmental organizations, they say, you know, the earth is the Lord's. And to the church, they say, the earth is the Lord's. So they use the sentence in two ways. The Christians, to make them aware about the earth as creation, and to other organizations they work together with very often to make them aware that it's God's creation. So,
well, thank you very much, Martina. Arocha is really something that I could recommend you look it up on the web. Some years ago, we gave Arocha a Hope Award.
Yeah.
Because we felt we really needed to encourage that initiative.
Yeah, it's true. Yes.
Well, thank you very much.